No money shall be drawn from the treasury, but in consequence of appropriations made by law.
Greetings and welcome to the Far and Beyond podcast, your guide to the legal intricacies behind the contract and fiscal laws that power the U.S. Army and the Department of Defense. I am Major Sarah Hickman.
And I am Major Dan Franco. Together, we are your co-hosts.
On this episode of the Far and Beyond, we are excited to speak with this year's capstone lecturer for the 95th Fiscal Law course, Ms. Margaret Boatner. Ms. Boatner currently serves as the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army for Strategy and Acquisition Reform, where she serves as the Principal Advisor to the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Acquisition, Logistics, and Technology for the design and implementation of acquisition policy and related reform initiatives.
Today, she's here to share some of these insights with you and to provide you some updates to DoD acquisition policy, specifically pertaining to the acquisition of software, which has been an exceptionally hot topic across the DoD enterprise over the past year.
Ms. Boatner, thank you so much for being here with us today. We are very excited to have you. I want to start out just for our listeners. So you are the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army for Strategy and Acquisition Reform. Can you please give us a brief overview of what your office handles?
Absolutely. First of all, thank you guys for having me today. I appreciate it. My organization really is responsible for two kind of key things. The first is all things acquisition policy, and so by that I mean setting the policy for how we go about developing and acquiring all of the capabilities that our soldiers need to be equipped for the fight. So everything from the services that we acquire all the way up to our most complex weapon systems like our helicopters and our tanks. So we set the policy for that. The second thing that we do is that we are responsible for identifying and spearheading discrete reform initiatives within the acquisition world designed to improve acquisition outcomes. And by that, and I think we'll get into it during this conversation, but the acquisition system within the Department of Defense and Department of the Army is a very complex process. And so there's lots of opportunities for streamlining and improving the way that we go about developing and buying our systems. And so my office is kind of always on the hunt for what those reforms could be so that we can make sure we have the best, most technologically advanced weapon systems for the warfighters.
Ma'am, so the National Defense Authorization Act of 2022 created a bipartisan commission to conduct an examination and provide recommendations of the Department of Defense planning, programming, budgeting, and execution process, also known as PBE. Could you explain for our listeners a little bit more about what the PBE process is?
Yeah, absolutely. So just to kind of level set up front, I think there's really three key processes that, from an acquisition perspective, drive our ability to make sure that we have the warfighting systems that we need. The first is requirements, meaning how do we go about identifying the actual capability or weapon system that we need for the fight? The second is the acquisition system, which is really the world that I operate within. And that's once our operators, once our soldiers have identified what they need for the fight, how do we actually develop and acquire these solutions? So that's the acquisition system world that I work in. And then really the third system that makes the whole thing work is the PBBE. Process, which really is just the funding process for the Department of Defense, broken down into the four phases of PBBE, which is a tongue-tied acronym. But it's a calendar-driven process. It's the process by which all DoD programs are funded, and it really starts up front with budget planning, and that really starts 2 years before execution. Before budget execution. So, for example, the FY25 budget request, President's budget request that the Department of Defense is about to submit to Congress this coming Monday, actually, so it's good timing. We started planning for that in 2022. So the planning phase of the PBBE process started 2.5 years ago, and that's how it is every time. We start this planning process years ahead of time. So we go through the planning and the programming and the budgeting. All of those phases take these 2.5 years, And it culminates in us submitting this budget request to Congress. Congress then, of course, takes the president's budget request and works on their appropriations bill, which they issue every year. When they issue that appropriations bill, that is the budget then that the Department of Defense can work within and work under. That identifies the top level of funding that we have for each of the services. And it also identifies specifically within the acquisition world what programs get what, meaning how much money did all of our programs get and what colors of money did they get? Because, of course, we operate within a world of different colors of money or appropriations. And that really dictates what we're able to do in any given year with the budget. And, of course, then we just start all over again, planning for the next couple of years.
And, ma'am, you alluded to it already, but, you know, what are some of those traditional roadblocks that the DoD has ran into, especially when it comes to the acquisition of things like technology and software?
Yeah, so broadly, when talking about kind of all three of those systems, again, the biggest challenge that we run into is that they are inflexible, rigid processes. So, for example, the requirements process, that often takes from the time a commander in the field has identified kind of a need, takes 2 to 3 years to get that requirement approved. So that's a process of getting the requirement up and getting it validated by any number of stakeholders across the Army or across the Department of Defense if it's intended to be a joint capability or something that multiple services will use. So the requirement alone takes 2 to 3 years. So if you're in the field and you say, I need this now, you're 3 years away from even getting it approved by the Army. Then we start the acquisition process, which, depending on how complex the weapon system is, can take another 4 to 8 years because we're developing a helicopter, for example, or a tank, for example, right? So some of these are very complex systems that take years and years and years to develop. And then you get to the budgeting process, which is that third key process and how all of this works. And that, as I mentioned, you start planning for 2 years in advance. So the problem with these processes is that there's very little opportunity to inject some of these emerging technologies that you mentioned. Because, for example, if 3 years ago when I identified my requirement, I didn't know that this new technology would be out. So while all of these new technologies have come out in the 3 years that I'm waiting for this requirement to be approved, by the time it gets approved, it's an obsolete technology. Same thing with our budgeting process. I identified something in 2022 that I thought was really important based on technologies of the time. I'm now submitting that budget to Congress this coming Monday for 2025. Think about how quickly technology has evolved in that time. I basically have planned for an iPhone 8, and we're now already at iPhone 15 by the time the budget comes out. But because of how rigid it is, I'm only allowed to buy that iPhone 8 because of the level of specificity in the budget request, because that's exactly what I asked for. So it's very, very hard under our current processes to inject the type of innovation that is going to be important for us to maintain a technological advantage, a competitive advantage over our adversaries, particularly as we move back into great power competition and we're focused on actors like China and Russia, who have the ability to inject these types of innovations much more quickly than we do. And so that has traditionally been the struggle with these processes that we have in place. There has been a ton of work over the last several years to focus on our requirements process and our acquisition process and PBBE together and separately to try to streamline and make these processes more flexible. And we have made great success there. But I think there's certainly still work to do.
Ma'am, so this report discusses the potential threats to national security, which is basically why this commission was ordered. Can you speak to what exactly are the potential threats to national security?
Yeah, so I think it's that we will fall behind from a technological standpoint against our adversaries, right? If private sector and others are constantly coming up with these great new innovations that can make our weapon systems more lethal, more secure, more reliable. If we don't have the ability to take advantage of those emerging technologies and very quickly integrate them into our weapon systems it puts our soldiers at a disadvantage because we no longer have the greatest weapon systems in the world, which is kind of what we've always had. So it puts us at a disadvantage, and it puts us a few steps behind other adversaries who can take advantage of all of those new and emerging technologies. And now that we're in the space of artificial intelligence and machine learning and really sophisticated technologies, you know, it's more important than ever that we can inject this type of innovation. And so our processes have to be more flexible so that we can do that. It really is a national security imperative, which is what the PBBE Commission talks about.
And the report that comes out really underscores what you were just discussing, that the process lacks agility, and it limits the department's ability to respond quickly and effectively to evolving threats. Ma'am, can you discuss some of the recommendations that were made in the report to improve the PPBE's process for agility and effectiveness?
Yeah, so they came up with a number of recommendations focused on innovation and agility specifically. Couple of things that they specifically called out that would be helpful to us. First, and probably most significantly, is that they recommend really a transformation of the budget structure. So right now, the way that we plan for our programs and our budget is by color of money. And by that, I mean RDT&E dollars, so research and development dollars to do development work, procurement dollars to actually buy and acquire these goods from private sector, O&M, operations and maintenance dollars, and those are that's the color of money we use to sustain our weapon systems once they've been developed and they're in our inventory. That's what we use to sustain them. So those three colors of money are really, from an acquisition perspective and a warfighting capability perspective, the three colors of money that we're most focused on. And we build our budget around those colors of money. The problem when you do that is that your program is then one program can be divvied across all of those different colors of money. And even more rigidly, they're divvied across very specific budget line items. And there are thousands of budget line items across the Army's budget. And so when you look at it, it's very rigid, right? So we are tied in to very specific amounts and colors of money for portions of programs. And as you all know, once Congress appropriates, we have very limited flexibility to deviate from what they've told us we can do, right? That would be a violation of the appropriations bill. It would be a violation of law to deviate from what Congress has actually appropriated to us. So we get locked in to executing exactly what we thought we wanted to execute 2 years ago. So what the commission does is it actually recommends that you turn that structure entirely on its head. So instead of budgeting by color of money, they are actually recommending that you budget by what they are calling major capability activity areas. And so an example of that is ground vehicles. So instead of budgeting by colors of money, which, if you think about it, really aren't tied to the national defense strategy in any meaningful way, they're just colors of money, you would do it by these major capability activity areas. So you would have air mobility, ground vehicles, the actual kind of capabilities that you use in a war fight. And so I would have all of my ground vehicles kind of in one budget, all of my programs that fall within that ground vehicle space under that, and then I would plan and program for different colors of money. So it's really flipping it on its head and allowing you to plan by entire capability system. And we have, you know, tens of programs under the ground vehicle capability that we would then have flexibility to move money in between and across all of our vehicle portfolios. Instead of being locked in by very specific colors of money and specific line items, we'd have so much more flexibility to move money as we need to without having to go back to Congress for permission, which is a very lengthy and time-consuming process. And so that's one of the more significant recommendations. That, of course, would require congressional action. We certainly can't do that on our own. So we'll have to see what Congress wants to do there. But they're also recommending that we reform what is known as the below-threshold reprogramming process. Basically, Congress has set a threshold by which, if it's under that amount, we can move money ourselves without having to go back to Congress. Those levels are very low. It is $10 million across all different colors, which, when you're talking about a very sophisticated, expensive helicopter, just isn't isn't a lot of money, doesn't give us a lot of flexibility to move or to deviate from what we planned for 2 years ago. And so they're recommending that we increase a lot of those thresholds across the different colors of money so that we do have more flexibility there. And ultimately, they're recommending a total removal of the kind of below threshold reprogramming process altogether, so that we can move more money more freely. Again, we can't do any of this without congressional kind of approval and implementation of these recommendations, but they do. They have probably 6 or 7 recommendations dedicated just to innovation and agility for us to be able to move money more quickly to respond to emerging technologies, evolving threats, changing soldier needs. So we'll have to see what Congress and the department want to do.
Ma'am, the report emphasizes that using different appropriations for software acquisition does not favor software's continuous and iterative nature. What recommendations did the commission make to address this concern?
Yeah, so when you look at all of these processes, whether it's requirements, acquisition, or the PBBE funding process, you know, these were put in place decades ago. I think in the 1960s is when PBBE was actually implemented. And so when they were put in place, they were put in place with a lot of very hardware-intensive systems in mind. Certainly, I mean, think about it, we weren't doing software like we're doing today in the 1960s. It just wasn't even imagined that we would have these types of technologies and that so many of our systems would be based on software. Think about it. All of our tanks, our helicopters, a lot of the ancillary equipment that goes on a soldier, like we have augmented reality goggles for our soldiers, they run on software. Think about just your cars today, just to give everybody a comparison. They run on software, right? They're not just hardware alone capabilities. They don't function or work without the software that goes with them. And that's what our weapon systems are like today. They really don't function without that software. But the problem is that these processes never accounted for that. And so when you look at the acquisition system and the PBBE system for software today, it kind of requires you to move in a sequential manner, meaning I'll get my R&D dollars and do my development work. I'll develop a system. I'll move on to my procurement dollars. I'll buy that system. Then I'll move on to my operations and maintenance dollars, and I'll sustain that system. The problem is, though, that software today is not developed kind of sequentially in that manner. You know, it's very common that software is maintained, meaning minor patches and bugs are fixed, at the same time that really new significant developed capabilities are pushed out on the software all at once, all in one software release. But because of the processes that we operate within right now, we can't pull all of those different colors of money at the same time for software. And so what PBBE talks about and what Congress has actually done is they've given us what they call Budget Activity 8. It's a separate color of money, if you will. It's RDT&E colored, but it's for software alone. And the point is then that is the only color of money that software systems would ever need. They don't need to worry about breaking it down by RDT&E, breaking it down by OMA, because again, it's all happening at the same time. It doesn't happen like a traditional hardware system. So it's one single stream of dollars that all of our software programs can use. It really makes budgeting much more a much more simplified process, and it allows us to respond and be much more agile because you don't have to worry about the different colors of money and what you can and can't do with those colors of money. And so Congress gave us that pilot a couple of years ago. We do have a program using it in the Army, and they've seen great success. PBBE Commission talks about it. They kind of applaud that pilot that we started a number of years ago. And they, I think, what bottom line, they encourage our continued use of it right now. But moving forward, they think that we could actually do even more if we implement some of those other changes that I talked about, which is you're not even worried about colors of money. You're really focused on capability area instead. So I think they support it in the near term, but in the long term, given that they're recommending such broad foundational changes to the whole system, they would recommend some additional tweaks to the way we do software.
And And ma'am, if we could focus on the specific Army Reform Initiative that you did just allude to. It's related to software modernization and specifically the funding of software development. If you could just dive into that a little bit more.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mentioned Congress gave us that pilot. We're only allowed to have one program in it. So that's not really a scalable solution for us right now. So we have to figure out other ways to be more effective with software in the near term. And so what this new reform initiative related to software modernization does is, first of all, it looks at all of the processes that underpin the software development lifecycle, and it makes changes to all of them. So requirements, acquisition, contracting, test and evaluation, but funding as well. It makes some changes to the way that we're going to do funding to software within the current legal framework that we have to operate within. And so right now, all of our systems, once they're done being developed, they move into what we refer to as sustainment. And once a system has moved into sustainment, it only gets operations and maintenance dollars. And by fiscal law and regulation, the only thing that you can do with operations and maintenance dollars for software are minor patches and fixes. So once our systems have made this transition, they can basically no longer do real development work, which, of course, puts us at a disadvantage because we're basically cutting off these software systems at the knees because of these fiscal rules. We're saying, hey, you've transitioned to sustainment. Now you can only do minor patches and fixes because you can only use these operations and maintenance dollars. So what we're doing in this initiative is we are actually getting rid of that transition to sustainment for our software programs. We are saying you will actually never transition to sustainment. You will forever stay in development. And if you guys are familiar with modern software development approaches, CICD, continuous integration, continuous development, is really a private sector best practice, meaning software is never done. You're never done developing software. It's being continually developed because there's always new innovations and always new ways to do software better. And so we are terminating that transition to sustainment. We are saying our software systems, much like private sector, will always stay in development, which means that they can always have those R&D dollars, which is going to be really critical because that's the only way that we can do real development work. So it's a way to get after the software problem within our current kind of legal and regulatory and policy framework. I do think we would like to be able to have even more flexibility, like what the Budget Activity 8 pilot that Congress gave us a few years ago recommends, or some of the things that the PBBE Commission recommends. But in the interim, given that this is a system that we operate within, that's one way for us to make sure that we can have that we can be rapidly upgrading and enhancing our software capabilities, which, you know, as I mentioned, are nearly all of our weapon systems. Software is, it's not just an IT system, it's our helicopters and it's our tanks. So it's really important that we can continue developing those.
Ma'am, thank you again so much for being here on the Far and Beyond podcast and breaking down such an important topic for us and for our listeners. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Thank you for joining us today in this episode of The Far and Beyond. Please make sure to follow us and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform.
We love to hear from our listeners. Please continue to reach out to us on Facebook and LinkedIn. The information can be found in the show notes from today's episode.
The views expressed today are those of the presenters, not that of the Judge Advocate General's Corps, the Department of the Army, or the Department of Defense.